Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sports Performance Radio Show, where you'll be entertained, educated, and motivated by top experts in a variety of fields, including sport, business, and fitness. Your host, Chris Thomas, is a speaker, certified mind performance consultant, personal trainer, sports and remedial massage therapist, and also 6 days to a champion's mindset. He wants to help you win. To learn about Chris, log on to u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk. Who's your special guest this week, Chris?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of the Sports Performance Radio Show, where we talk to great athletes about their mental skills needed in their sport. And I'm your host, Chris Thomas. Today, we welcome a very, very special guest onto the show in Louise Hazel. And Louise is a 26-year-old international heptathlete and is the 2010 Commonwealth Heptathlon Champion. Louise, like many athletes, has had to overcome various challenges, but true to her nature, she is able to bounce back after disappointment. It seems her favorite quote is one by Mark Twain, which is, "It's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog." And those are true words indeed. Louise continues towards her goal of London Olympic success, and we look forward to talking to her about that, amongst other topics. Louise, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks
How
for
are
having
you?
Me.
No,
I'm not too bad.
Great, thank you. Thanks for being on the show and agreeing to come on. It's been for me quite exciting to get a chance to speak to you and delve into your world and into your sport.
Indeedy. Fire away, Chris.
Yeah. First of all, I'd just like to ask, what made you get into heptathlon?
Well, at school, I participated in a number of different sports. One night of the week, I'd do trampolining. The next night, it would be netball, hockey, rounders. I even tried rugby. So I was pretty much a good all-rounder at sport. And so when it came to athletics, you know, it seemed like a natural path just to go into multi-events, and that's where I found myself doing the pentathlon, as it was first, and now obviously the heptathlon.
Okay. Now, the heptathlon, obviously 7 events. Can you just give us a breakdown of the actual events, which ones it is, just for those listeners that perhaps aren't too aware of what the heptathlon involves?
Of course. So it's 7 track and field events. So it takes part over 2 days. The first day of competition, we do the hurdles, the 100-metre hurdles, that is, the high jump. Then we move on to the shot put, and we finish the first day with the 200 metres. And on the second day, we get up and we do the long jump and the javelin, and then we round off with the 800 metres. So it's quite a grueling competition and quite stressful 2 days.
Yeah, sounds like it, yeah. How are the points worked out? Because it's one of those sports where it goes into the thousands. So how are they worked out?
Basically, we have a combined events booklet, which every single performance equates to a number of points. And basically, it's calculated so that obviously the better you do, the more points you get. There are certain events which are higher point scoring events. So, for example, the high jump, the long jump, the hurdles and 200 tend to be the events where you can pick up a lot of points, and the lower point scoring events, so the events that you'd have to do extremely well into to score higher amount of points, are the throwing events. So, for example, the javelin and the shot put. And I think that's why Great Britain has such a great reputation in combined events, because we tend to be really natural jumpers and runners, not so talented throwers, mind, but we tend to battle through.
Okay. I know this weekend you competed in the UK indoor trials in Sheffield.
That's right, yeah.
How did the 2 days go?
Well, it wasn't too bad, really. I did the shot put, and that was the first time I'd competed at the World Trials in the shot put. I threw 12 metres 30, which is only less than half a metre off of my best throw. But technically, it was abysmal. So I was a bit frustrated that I didn't get a better throw out. But I actually made the top 8, the final, so I was pleased about that. However, the hurdles today was a bit of a disaster as we went into... We had had heats and finals, and as normal, expected to make the final, but hit the fourth hurdle and got literally just chased down in the race and didn't make the final. So unfortunately, when you've only got five barriers to get through in such a short race, you've got to clear every single one of them. So it was a little bit frustrating today, but you know, it's still obviously early doors when it in this year, and I've got a couple more competitions ahead.
Yeah, is there anything that you can take from the weekend that as positives, you would say?
Oh yeah, definitely. The shot put, I felt like I had lots more in the can, and I had a couple of big nose throws, so that was nice. And the hurdles is just, you know, I feel quite strong. I felt quite positive in the event. You just, when you hit a hurdle, you just have to get up and keep running, really. I didn't fall over, so that was a positive. One of the good things is I'm still in good shape, and, you know, sometimes competition doesn't always go as you planned, but it's about how you react to that and how you focus on the next one. So I think it's been nice, a little bit of a reality shock, because it makes me more hungry for the next time I go out and compete.
True, yeah. And talking about how you look forward, that you have a poor performance, but you look forward to the next one, you take positives out of what just happened. How do you deal with poor performances as an athlete? And this might be information that is useful to not only sports people, but all of us, really, when we try to overcome barriers and hurdles in life.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important when you have, you know, poor performance, that you put it in perspective. You know, this weekend for me was, although it was the World Trials, it's almost a stepping stone to London 2012. So this is the point at which it's okay to make mistakes.
Right.
You have to, you know, as an athlete, not beat yourself up too much.
Sure.
Everyone, you know, makes errors, everyone makes mistakes, and it's about how you, you know, bounce back from that. So you need to go back, reassess what it was you did wrong, and then execute the next time round. If you don't make the errors and mistakes, then you can never learn. And my attitude is always take whatever it comes and just take it on the chin and, you know, dust yourself off and get up and try again. But in the same sense, it can be very difficult, and I understand that from a competitor's perspective, because you always want to do well. You want to step out every time when you can compete and do extremely well. So although it's only a hurdles race, it might only be a shot put or a high jump competition, you do put a certain amount of expectation on your own shoulders. But the reality of it is I tend to put things in the bigger picture and think about things as a whole, and not get too carried away with just one poor performance, for example.
I like the quote that you use, I think it's on your website as well, of Mark Twain. It's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. How do you relate to those words?
I mean, the main thing for me, my biggest setback to date came in 2008. And that year I lost my lottery funding. I didn't make it to the Beijing Olympic Games. My father also passed away quite early doors in the season, which was obviously a massive, massive shock.
Of course,
that I obviously, you know, struggled to overcome. But on a positive note, I found that when I was put in a position whereby I didn't have any choice but to go out into my local community and seek support through sponsorship and other means, I found that when I was kind of backed into the corner, it was a real test, and a test of my character and a test of my kind of inner strength. And I kind of knew that I wasn't the person that was going to give up on my athletics and my dream of competing in London 2012. I was the person that was kind of going to bounce back, and I think that that's where that's why that quote is so poignant to me, and it means so much, because, you know, it was my ability to bounce back from setbacks, major setbacks that, you know, people in life encounter every day, but not only as a person, also to be able to bounce back as an athlete. So, that's why that's really important to me, and I keep that quite firmly in my mind.
Okay, great. What's important to you about your sport, would you say?
Athletics, to be honest, it means everything to me. It's an escape from the daily routine. It's, you you know, become obviously a career. It's given me the opportunity to travel, to meet people, and also I think the biggest thing is it's helped me to grow as a person. I think that when you're a youngster and you're competing and you're doing your county championships and you're travelling locally in and around the area, you kind of dream of being a sportswoman. But when it actually happens, it makes you realise how very lucky you are to be doing something that you love every day. And I think not many people can say, you know, they're doing a job that they love and they're massively passionate about. But that's what athletics, it brings me, you know, obviously massive highs and massive lows. But that's just the nature of the job, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thanks for that. This show is all about mind performance and the kind of mental skills that you guys, the elite athletes, use in your sport. So I wanted to talk about a bit about stress in sport. It's a big issue. And I think it's more, people are more aware now that stress, sports stress, is a real issue. So what's your view on stress in sport?
I think the word pressure sums it up, really, because you know, there are a couple of angles in which you can tackle it. Every athlete puts pressure on themselves. Every athlete expects to do well. They put the hard work in. They expect to get it out. So it's not only the pressure that you put on yourself. That also comes in the form of the pressure that your coaches may put on you, your mum and dad. You know, everyone around you can expect something from you. One of my old coaches told me, basically, Louise, just expect nothing, because then everything is a bonus. And to a certain extent, he's right. You know, as long as you're breathing and you're living, then you're doing well, so to speak. You know, as long as you're healthy and you're able to do what you do, everything else is a complete and utter bonus. So I tend not to think too much about pressure. I don't let it get to me. I tend to turn it into a positive rather than a negative. And, of course, when you're standing on the start line in front of 20,000 people about to, you know, run the hurdles, your first event, one of seven, it's very hard to kind of channel out those negative thoughts and turn them into something positive. But I guess that's a skill that as an athlete you have to learn. And I think, you know, people in general could do well learning a few skills as how to deal with just daily stresses.
How do you, like, block out distracting thoughts?
I think the first thing for me, it's all about preparation. It's how I prepare for my event. So when I get from the moment I get up in the morning, it's about how you start your day. So I always try and start my day in, you know, same kind of, a similar kind of way. Get up, make sure, you know, nice fresh shower, get you wide awake and alert, and then just plaster on a load of makeup. Make sure you're going out as looking as good as you can for the time you've got.
Okay.
And, you know, when I get in my car and go to the track, I hold my head up high. And when I arrive, first thing I do is put some good music on. And as I'm warming up, I kind of, you know, choose a track that I feel like, yeah, okay, I'm feeling that today. And it just puts me in a good mood and sets me up for the session then. Whether I come away from the session disappointed or excited, you know, it doesn't make any difference. My preparation is always the same, and I try not to dwell too much on the positive and too much on the negative. I try to just, you know, take every day quite simply as it comes.
And it's true what you're saying about stress or pressure. It's not actually the pressure that is the issue or the challenge. It's, if it's managed well, it's all about how you adapt or react to the stressor, isn't it? Because we all have stresses in our life.
That's right, Essentially, pressure is about, it's, you know, pure and simply about the, what you perceive it to be.
Yeah.
Might be stressful for some people to get up early in the morning. It might not be for others. But it's about, you know, how you put things into perspective. And it's as simple as that. I think when it's easy to feel pressure in some situations, and what I try to do is take myself outside of that and think about how grateful I should be and how lucky I am. And that tends to kind of make the pressures kind of dissipate and go away.
You talked about the... I'm sorry. You talked about the pressure of winning, and mm-hmm. that can cause stress in an athlete's life. Nowadays, we don't really hear about burning out or people that sports people burning out. But is that because something has changed in their training, or you know, something's improved? What's your take on that?
I mean, I think burnout does happen. Mm. We don't hear about it massively amongst the top sports people, but you know, 10-20 years ago, when my coach, you know, was an athlete, you know, he basically said the amount of volume they used to do. Athletes used to rarely make it to the age of 25. So now, if you consider, you know, we compete into our 30s, into our mid-30s, you know, but our medical support, everything has moved on since then. And, you know, we have better training facilities, we have warm weather training camps, we've got everything we need in order to ensure longevity. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if we're talking about stress related to winning, mm. Like burnout probably comes because athletes try too hard. And the reality of it is, once you make it to elite level, it's just about kind of baby steps then. There are very few times you can make massive, massive gains when you're at elite level. It's just about literally chipping a little bit away each time. Okay. And sometimes as an athlete, it's very difficult to accept the fact that you may not win. Mm. And then on the other hand, you know, you have to be aware that at the end of the day, if you don't give it everything, you have no chance of winning. So I never really, as an athlete, go out there with the mindset, you know, if I don't win this race, then it's going to have X, Y, or Z consequences. I put myself in a situation whereby I've got nothing to lose.
Mm.
So I set myself up financially, mentally, and physically in a situation whereby I say I've got nothing to lose by going into this race and giving it my all. And that way there's no fear, you know, there's no negative
failure
experience. Yeah. Yeah, there's no negative experience to be had.
Mm. Okay, great. Now, you're unique in that you train for 7 events. Mm-hmm. Now, there must be certain events that could cause stress because you have a negative response to it, because it's not the most favorite or the one that you're more skilled at or better at or get better results out of. What mm-hmm. coping strategies do you have in dealing with that?
I guess the events I struggle probably most with are the high jump and the 800 metres. And with the high jump, it's an event whereby you come from the hurdles, you're massively excited, you're mm-hmm. hepped up and everything's, you know, at 100%. And then you get to the high jump and it's a complete and utter contrast. I have to make sure that I'm kind of calm, I'm in control,
yeah.
and I'm able to execute what I need to do. So once I finish a hurdles race, I tend to lie down and kind of what I call centering. And that's
yeah.
just trying to get your breathing rate back to normal. Pick out one or two things that you want to focus on in the event and then just leave that as your focus. Don't worry about the excitement or the nerves or the adrenaline, because all of that is, you know, it's already there. For me, the high jump is an event whereby I have to try and overcome my anxiety, and I have to do that by using kind of relaxation techniques and also self-talk.
Yep,
so
yep.
often you'll see me competing, I'll be talking to myself, might even be beating my chest and telling myself, come on, believe, you can do it.
Yep,
and
yep.
it's stuff like that. I might look a little bit crazy, but it works, you know. So
now we know. Now we know, you're not crazy.
That's right. And the all that time you thought I was going mad.
Yeah,
but,
now I know. Yeah,
in comparison, the 800 metres is an event in the heptathlon that all of the girls dread. It's the only event that hurts. You know that pain is going to come, you just don't know when it's going to set it. Excuse me. So you have to kind of get your head around that from the start, and as soon as you accept the fact that it's going to hurt, you can just get on and run a good race. And my coach says at the end of the day, the quicker you run, the sooner you can finish and you can lie down. So that's
true.
The only thing really going through my mind when I'm battling around the 800 metres.
Okay. Louise, I want to step away a little bit from sport and talk about, I was looking at your website and I was very interested in the section that you have where you've written some poetry.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah? I read all of them, and a couple caught my eye, which I thought were really great. How do you use
poetry? Which ones did you like?
There's the kindness and...
Oh, that's a nice poem, yes.
And the water, something about water.
Yeah, you get where water can't.
That's right, yeah, that's right. Because you talk about a limpet. And yeah, the metaphors that you use in there is really, really quite interesting, really nice. Do you use poetry, or do you find that it helps you not only in your personal life, in your mindset, clearing things in your mind, or meditating on things? Do you find that it can help you in your sport as well? Is that, or not so?
I guess, you know, it does. The reason I write poetry, like you say, is a means of self-expression. Mm. And although a lot of it is to do with feelings that I've experienced, some of it as well is in relation to, you know, what my friends are feeling. And I tend to be the person that everybody goes to for advice, because I'm quite honest and, you know, I say what I mean, and it's as simple as that. So I write the poetry just really as a way to get things off of my chest, which then lightens the load when I go to the track and, you know, I have to do a session. So, and it's nice for me to share that with people, and I get some really positive responses from it. And people say, do you know what, I felt like that as well, or I completely understand what you mean when you say this. So I've found that it's actually almost quite therapeutic to write poetry.
Yeah.
And it's a real stress relief, I guess.
I noticed that you haven't written any lately, so I implore you to write
some.
No,
there's a big one that I'm waiting. I want to put it online, but I'm just waiting for the right time, yeah. So there's one I've been contemplating. Oh, it's a big poem. It's a few verses. It's very long and very intense. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Maybe I'll put it on tonight, yeah.
And you know, I don't want to influence you or anything like that, but you know, if there was a poem that you wrote about today's show, you know, and speaking on the show today, what would it say? Be nice.
It would obviously be about stress.
Yes.
I've got one called Chinese Burn.
Okay.
And it's basically, the last line of it is basically about, you know, it's about how that good things can also hurt as well. So as well, you know, stress can be good, stress can be bad.
Yeah.
Things can have a positive and negative effect on you. And it just, you know, it's about the way you look at things, isn't it? Exactly what we've been talking about, really.
Cool. I hope it's not just all the stressful that you go away with in your mind.
Of course not.
I've received a few tweets from some of our listeners, and they've got questions for you. And this one is from, it's on Twitter, from Poppy Christie. And she asks, which discipline do you enjoy the most in your sport? Or,
my favourite event has got to be the javelin.
Okay.
Although it's not my best event, it's the one I love doing. I just, when I get out there, I picture myself, I'm someone else. I'm like a javelin thrower, like a male javelin thrower, that's what I think.
Mm.
And, you know, I just get really up for the event. You'll always see me screaming it out there as I throw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I were better at it, I'd definitely do it as a single event.
That's an interesting strategy that you use, because that's similar to something I use with clients where if they're not performing too well in a specific event, is to imagine their favorite sports person doing that event. So they've probably got someone who, you know, who they look up to. And to imagine, it's going to sound weird, but to imagine, first of all, their head on their body doing the action, and then slowly introduce the arms and the body and the leg. It sounds really weird, but it really does work, and it's quite powerful.
I know what you mean. When I'm standing there with a javelin in my hand, suddenly I've got these big quads. They're man-sized quads, and my legs have gone all hairy, and suddenly I just find this strength that I didn't know I had. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Who do you transform into? I'm wondering.
Well, I can't tell you that.
Oh, wow, okay.
No.
Okay.
Brilliant.
another question we have from, again, this is from Twitter, and it's from Perdon Martin. I think that's Paul Martin. And he asks, would you prefer it if they replaced the heptathlon with the decathlon, meaning more pain but also more battle?
No, I wouldn't. I think, I mean, women have the opportunity. I know there's one every year in France, and retiring athletes tend to think, oh, yeah, I'll just give it a bash. But at the end of the day, the events that you're picking up are the pole vault, the 400 metres, and the discus. And I think if they were to kind of try and introduce, and this was talk a couple of years ago, trying to introduce the decathlon, I think it would really take away from, you know, the art that is the heptathlon. I mean, the guys, it's a show of strength. You've got 10 events to get through, and it's quite well balanced. But I think if you're going to add pole vault and discus, they're quite technical events, and it's not something that will come naturally to a lot of heptathletes. And I think it would change the event massively and very dramatically, and not for a positive, because I don't like running 1500s either.
Okay. Have a text question from Anthony. And Anthony asks, how do you initially psych yourself up, firstly, to do the task and keep it up?
Psyching myself up is all about music, the choice of music. At the minute, I'm listening to a bit of Tiny Temper. If I'm feeling, you know, I need to feel quite aggressive and it's almost like you're preparing for war, I tend to listen to a bit of hip-hop, something obviously quite hard-hitting and quite edgy. And then if I'm just feeling like I need to, that the aggression and the speed and everything is all there, and I just need to think positively, I'll listen to something a bit more commercial and just, you know, something that's going to get me in a really good mood.
Like Kylie or something?
No, I wouldn't say Kylie. I like that... I can't remember who sang it, but The Sunshine. Is it Labyrinth? I think it was last year. I remember listening to that during a warm-up. That worked well.
Okay, cool.
And, so I sat myself up with some good music and a good warm-up. And what was the second question? I can't remember.
I think it's related to kind of like it's first to do the task and then to keep it up. So.
And, yeah, your adrenaline really just keeps your mind and your focus there. And obviously making sure that you eat the right food during the day, because like anything, you can have a real lull. So make sure that you've got kind of plenty of kind of sugar in the system, which keeps you, you know, a little bit wired, I guess. But it's as simple as that. And like I said earlier, a bit of self-talk just to gear yourself up a bit and get yourself going during the competition. And
yeah.
So that helps.
Okay, and we'll take one more question. This has been texted in from, they've not given a name, so it's 911, is the last few digits, 911. You know who you are. So, and their question is, despite having distracting personal issues, how does one manage to focus so as not to allow them to distract and affect performance?
Well, I think, you know, everyone finds themselves in a situation, whether it be work or whether it be obviously sports performance, whereby there can be things going on in your personal life with family, friends, it might be the boyfriend or the girlfriend, things that just, you know, detract and take away from your what you want to achieve on a daily basis. And for me, when I step onto the line to race, that will go to the back of my mind. It might be there in warm-up, it could even be there in warm-down, but for those split seconds where I have to focus and really concentrate, that's never really a massive issue for me, because I tend to not, you know, as much as I think about things and life obviously gets in the way and can affect you, I always tend to think about what's controllable and what's not under your control. So, for example, my mother, she fell ill in November of this year. It was quite a difficult time, as you can imagine. But I just thought, you know, she's in the best place. You know, as long as she's being looked after, she'll get the best chance of recovery. And I, at that point, although it was very difficult, I realised that there was nothing that I could actually do in order to help, and that was all kind of being done. So I just had to kind of almost detach myself from it and just focus on myself and what it is I was still trying to achieve. And I think that's important. When you come up against personal issues, you have to think about what it is you want, what your goal is, and try not to, you know, defer too much off of the path. And sometimes when you think about what it is you want and what you want to achieve, that can give you the answers that you need when you're looking for, you know, perhaps making a good choice and making a hard decision perhaps.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for giving us your thoughts on that. And thank you to our listeners for sending in those questions. I always look forward and appreciate that. I've got one more question for you, Louise.
Yep.
Do you know what time it is?
It's 6:30.
No, it's not. It's brain drain time. Every time I have the show, I like to do a quiz to our guests. It's only a small quiz, and it's normally I give a multiple choice question, but today, today I'm not going to do that. Today is just a true or false question.
So
50-50. It's a real simple, well, actually I won't say that. it's one question that I'm sure you've heard of before. So here we go. I'm going to give you the question, and then I'm going to give you 10 seconds just to think of the answer, and then I'll push you for the answer after that. Are you ready? Okay.
Yes.
True or false, we only use 10% of our brain. So
false. I know it's probably true, but I swear it's like 20%, isn't it, or something? It's true, isn't it? Is that at any given time?
Not specifically. Do you want 10 more seconds to think about it?
We only use 10% of our brain.
Yes, yeah, true or false? We only use 10% of
false.
Our brain. False.
I'm going with false. Because I know I've got quite an active brain, so I must be using more than 10% of it.
Okay. So your answer is false. Louise?
Yeah.
We're just going to take a short break and we'll come back.
Discover today how you too can become a qualified mind performance consultant. We run courses regularly throughout the whole year. Visit www.u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk and call 020-8816-7973. On completion of the course, you qualify as both a sports and general mind performance consultant and receive not one, but two certificates respectively. Call 0208-816-7973 today. Help others improve their sport and personal goals. Visit the website today and check the dates for our upcoming courses or call 020-8816-7973. U2 Mind Body Fitness. The psychology of language, achievement, and change.
Okay, so just before the break, we asked Louise, true or false, we use only 10% of our brain. Louise, you chose false, right?
Wait, I'm going to go on Google now.
No, you're not allowed, no.
Can't call a friend.
I said false.
You said false. I can now tell you. All right.
It's correct.
It's actually a myth that has been passed around for many, many, many years that we only use 10%, or some people say 3% of our brain, which is just untrue. I think it came from some research that they've done on mice and something Einstein said about we don't use all the brain to its capacity. So it's an absolute myth. So anyone that says it to you...
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I know my brain works at like 10,000 miles per hour, so I thought 10%, no, it can't be.
I want to ask you, I heard that you have like a bucket list or a to-do list that you've written.
Yeah, the single girl's to-do list, it's called.
Single girl's to-do list, okay.
Yeah, I'll bring it up on my computer now. Go on.
All right. What's on it?
Oh my gosh! Let me just have a quick look. I'll explain the kind of premise behind it. I read a book by Lindsay Kelk called Single Girls To-Do List. It was about a lady who got dumped by her boyfriend. I'm not saying this is what's happened to me, but I'm 26 and I found myself in a situation whereby I'm completely and utterly single. But I thought, you know, other than being single, because I've got a lot of single friends and it seems to always crop up in conversation, I thought, okay, rather than think about what we don't have, why don't we think about what we do have and what we have achieved? So I started to write a list about all the things that I've done since I've been single. And I'm just looking now, there's 47 points.
47.
And, yeah, and another 20-odd of things that I want to do, still that I've yet to do. So do you want me to give you a few?
Yeah, why not, please?
Just really simple ones, like dye my hair, for
what
example. I went for like a reddy brown, and then I did it again. It went really red, so I dyed it back brown. So that didn't really work out, but I did it.
True to your nature of your name as well.
That's right, Hazelnut.
Yeah.
And then it was stuff like sell my car. So I got a new car, so I was happy with that. And that always gives you a little bit of a boost, doesn't it?
Yep.
It was a really nice, this one was good, watch the Wales versus Australia rugby match. That was nice because I'd never been to watch rugby before.
Okay.
So it was a nice change. Like they say, change is as good as the best. As the best. Write poetry, that was one.
Oh, brilliant.
Or buy some designer shoes.
Okay.
I'd do that one every week if I could. And I'll give you one more. That's a little outlook.
Give us an outrageous one.
An outrageous one.
Yeah, an absolutely outrageous one that you wrote down.
Golf lessons.
Golf lessons, okay. That's outrageous. Why is that outrageous?
It's not really.
a safe outrageous one, if you like.
Oh, I don't know if I can. There aren't really any outrageous ones. I haven't done anything like bungee jump or anything like that. I'm obviously saving that till after I give up athletics.
Maybe you can give me one off air then.
Okie dokie, I'll see what I can do.
There's been lots of talk just recently about your sponsors, and that you recently just got some sponsors. So how is that going to help you for this year, especially towards the London Olympics?
As I said, we started the sponsorship journey in 2008. When I finished university, I realised I didn't have my student loan anymore. Obviously, my father had passed away and he'd been a real supporter and would help finance my athletics. So I sought out 12 local sponsors in Birmingham, in the Birmingham area, to help me to London 2012. And I just got them all on board about 2 weeks ago now. So that gives me the opportunity to meet all of the expenditures without worrying, without having to go and get a part-time job. Prior to that, I was working two part-time jobs, trying to train and look for sponsorship. So you can imagine it was very demanding. So it's allowed me to gradually knock the jobs on the head one by one and focus all of my attention on training and competing for London 2012. And I think the best thing that it does when you have your finances in place is it buys you time. So it's time that you can dedicate to going to get physio treatment or massage. It's time that you can use to go and travel to see other coaches, or even just time that you can take out to go warm weather training, so you haven't got to worry about whether you've got annual leave and things like that. So, and with obviously 7 events to train for, time is you know, and there doesn't seem to be enough time in the week.
Sure.
In the morning sometimes. So it's something. Getting the sponsorship on board has really been able to, I've been able to put my mind at ease and focus on the job in hand, really. And that's a massive, massive bonus. And I'd like to, you know, thank them all for their support, because without that, I wouldn't have made it to the Commonwealth Games. I wouldn't have had a medal there and hopefully go on and achieve success this year as well.
Mm. You said you gave a comment that was, I thought was really nice about using the funding, part of the funding, to reimburse coaches for their travelling, et cetera, because a lot of them don't get paid, or they do it from their heart.
That's right, yeah. I mean, my head coach at the moment is a paid coach. However, the coaches that I use to help me with the javelin and the high jump, for example, are part-time coach. One's a part-time coach, and he's a fireman on the side, so like a full-to-part-time fireman. And my javelin coach is in full-time work as well. So it means that they take time out of their busy schedules to come and visit me to help, so that I don't have to travel and expend all my, you know, energy.
Yeah.
So they come to me to help me train to try and achieve my dream. And I just think, you know, it's, you know, why should they pay out of their pocket to come and help me when it's a service that I need? You know, in sports like tennis, for example, it's unheard of that you don't pay your tennis coach.
Right.
So why should it be like that in athletics? And I just thought, you know, this is something that I need to invest in, and it's something that I need to work for in order that it's available to me and it's a service that I need. And that's why, you know, I've been very lucky. And my sponsors have obviously, you know, been aware of that and been willing to help me to get all of the coaching that you need on board, because obviously, when you've got seven events to train for, it's difficult sometimes to get the technical input that you need from one source.
Right, okay. Thank you very much. So, what's now for Louise Hazel? What have you got coming up? And
well, I think the frustration from the World Trials this weekend has made me really hungry for more competition. So I'm looking possibly to a meeting in Belgium next week.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe back to Sheffield the following week for the McCain City Challenge. Either way, I'd love to be able to compete in the hurdles again, the high jump and the shot put, just because I feel like, you know, I need to confirm the fact that I know that I'm in good shape in these events. And then back into training and preparing for the outdoor season. My first competition will be in May, and I'm going out to the Czech Republic for my first heptathlon. And then I've already got the A standard for London 2012. So now it's just making sure I'm in good shape and getting raring up to that, really.
And how can, apart from your web page, how can people find out more about you?
You can follow me on Twitter, and that's at Louise Hazel, LOUISEHAZEL, and also my web page, which is www.louisehazel.com. And I've also got a fan page on Facebook as well. So just have a little search on there. I'm sure you'll find it.
Brilliant. Well, Louise, we wish you all the best for this year, for the London Olympics, and we'll be following your progress and your success at the London Olympics, before the London Olympics and afterwards as well. So we thank you very much for coming onto the show.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much for having me.
Great. If you can just stay online, and I'll just wind up here the show. So thank you again to Louise for coming to the show. Louise Hazel is a 2010 Commonwealth champion, and she really gave us a real insight into the elite athlete mind and the sport as well. Thank you to all our listeners and those that sent in the messages. You're welcome. Your company is always welcome for us, and we look forward to doing another show so you can listen in. This is the Sports Performance Radio Show, and we've been speaking to Louise Hazel. My name is Chris Thomas. Thank you and goodbye.
Find more details about how you too can become a mind performance coach on u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk. Contact Chris at sportsminds at u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk or call 0208-816-7973 for more information. And why not learn the secrets of the elite mindset in the book, The Save for a Champion's Mindset, now available on Amazon. Discover how you too can transform your life and